You probably think the most dangerous part of your commute is, I don't know, the erratic driver weaving through traffic next to you.
Right, or like a sudden downpour on the highway, something like that.
Yeah, exactly. But statistically, the most dangerous stretch of asphalt you're going to drive across today is actually the exact area designed to, eventually make the road safer.
Right, the active construction zone.
Yeah.
It's a really fascinating and honestly terrifying paradox because we view construction zones as just, temporary inconveniences.
Right, just annoying traffic delays.
Exactly. But from a biological and physical standpoint, they are these highly volatile environments where the margin for human error just drops to absolute zero.
And the shrinking margin for error is exactly what we are exploring today. So, welcome to a special deep dive brought to you by the law offices of Norman Gershaw. Today's mission is to examine this really terrifying recent tractor-trailer crash in a Westchester County work zone. We've got a stack of local reports and safety analyses here, and we're really going to look under the hood of these incidents.
Because it's not just a freak accident, right? We
Yeah.
want to understand the actual neurobiology of why drivers fail in these zones.
Yeah, the brutal physics of what happens when a commercial truck is involved.
Right.
And finally, how victims navigate the massive adversarial legal systems that just immediately take over after these crashes happen.
Yeah, because if you look at the source material, I mean, this isn't just a story about one bad night in Westchester. This is a systemic issue across the entire
Oh,
region.
absolutely.
The hazards we're going to discuss today, they're practically a permanent fixture for anyone commuting in the tri-state area.
Yes. So let's start right there by breaking down the anatomy of this specific near tragedy in Westchester, because it just perfectly illustrates how quickly a routine situation spirals.
Right, it really does.
So the reports show this happened in the early morning hours. We have a massive commercial tractor trailer navigating an active construction area. And the sequence of events is just a cascading failure.
Yeah, total domino effect.
Right. The truck driver apparently just failed to register the initial lane shift warnings and then subsequently blew right past the secondary traffic control signs.
Which, is the classic hallmark of a work zone failure. Because missing that first sign isn't like missing a speed limit sign on some empty rural highway.
Right, where you have miles to correct yourself.
Exactly. In a work zone, the geography is actively changing right in front of you.
And because of that missed warning, this enormous truck ends up colliding with a parked pickup truck that was sitting directly inside the active work zone.
Yeah.
Both drivers were severely injured. And, navigating an active work zone in a massive commercial truck is kind of like trying to steer a freight train through a slalom course.
That's a great way to put it.
But my immediate thought reading this is about the timing,
Yeah.
the early morning hours.
Right.
Why do these specific early morning hours seem so uniquely vulnerable to these cascading failures of attention? Are we just talking about a driver who didn't get enough sleep, or is there something like mechanically happening in the brain?
Oh, it goes way deeper than just feeling drowsy. You really have to look at the biology of circadian rhythms.
Okay.
Between the hours of roughly 2:00 a.m. and 5:00 a.m., the human body is experiencing its deepest circadian dip.
So the body's just telling itself to shut down.
Literally, yes.
Yeah.
Your core body temperature drops, and your brain is actively being bathed in melatonin, which is the hormone that signals, it's time to sleep.
Wow.
So what happens to your cognitive processing? The actual transmission of electrical signals in your brain physically slows down.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, your reaction time expands from fractions of a second to full
So
seconds.
the eyes might be open, they might be staring at the road, but the visual cortex is actually lagging behind what the eyes are seeing.
Precisely. It's a physiological lag. Now take that compromised biological state and place it into an active work zone.
Which is chaos.
Complete sensory overload. A work zone requires a driver to process just a staggering amount of novel visual data. You've got flashing orange lights, shifting reflective lines,
Temporary signage everywhere.
right, temporary signs, the shadows of heavy machinery, and all of this while traveling at highway speeds. The cognitive load is just immense.
So if that sluggish, early morning brain fails to process that very first lane shift warning, the math just turns against the driver instantly.
Instantly. By the time the secondary signs actually register in the frontal lobe, the truck's physical stopping distance vastly exceeds the physical space remaining before the active work area.
Which completely explains why the collision happened where it did,
Right,
right?
right.
Directly inside the protected zone.
Yeah.
I mean, the workers and that parked pickup truck, they're essentially sitting ducks. They're stationary, probably assuming those orange cones create some kind of force field.
Right, which we all do.
Yeah, but there's no actual physical barrier stopping 80,000 pounds of momentum.
And that false sense of security is exactly what makes these breaches so devastating. A protected work zone is really only protected if the drivers outside of it are processing information at peak efficiency.
Well, let's take this biological reality and apply it to the actual geography we deal with around here. Because this is a regional crisis, not just one isolated incident in Westchester.
Oh, absolutely not.
The sources point to the same patterns repeating across Westchester County, White Plains, Yonkers, the Bronx, Queens, and literally all throughout New York City.
Yeah, I mean, it is virtually impossible to commute in this region without encountering these specific environmental hazards on a daily basis.
Right. Just think about the arteries you probably drive on every week, the Cross Bronx Expressway, I-287 over in Harrison, the Hutchinson River Parkway, the New York State Thruway.
All of them.
All of them. The common denominator right now is the sudden appearance of these concrete barriers just squeezing you in, impossibly narrow lanes, and those overnight paving projects that seem to just change the traffic patterns from Tuesday to Wednesday.
It's disorienting.
Totally. Now, the sources list the common causes of crashes here, right? Distracted driving, speeding through construction zones, driver fatigue, failing to merge properly.
The usual suspects.
Yeah, but I kind of want to push back on this because it feels counterintuitive to me.
How so?
Well, if you're driving on the Cross Bronx Expressway or I-287 and you suddenly see concrete barriers and narrow lanes, shouldn't human instinct make you slow down? Like, shouldn't danger make you hyper alert?
You would think so.
Right. Why is this environment actually leading to catastrophic multi-vehicle crashes happening in literal seconds?
Well, that is the logical assumption, right? That danger makes us hyper alert. But to understand why that doesn't actually happen, we have to look at the neurobiology of a daily commuter.
Okay, lay it on me.
So when you drive the exact same route every day, your brain actually shifts the cognitive workload.
Like it optimizes it.
Exactly. It moves the task of driving away from the prefrontal cortex, which is the part responsible for active, conscious decision-making, and it hands it over to the basal ganglia.
The basal ganglia.
Right. And the basal ganglia operates on automaticity. It is, for all intents and purposes, the brain's autopilot.
Oh, wow. That makes perfect sense. It's why you can sometimes, you know, drive home from work and pull into your driveway and realize you don't even remember the last 10 minutes of the trip.
Exactly. We've all done it. Neural pathways have literally thickened for that specific route, creating this path's least resistance. You subconsciously know where the curves are, where the potholes usually are, where the lanes widen.
Right. Your brain just maps it out.
Yeah. Now imagine you are on autopilot on I-287 and an overnight paving project has suddenly introduced a sharp lane shift and a wall of concrete barriers that, well, they weren't there yesterday.
Oh, wow. So your autopilot is driving a map that no longer exists.
That is the perfect way to phrase it. It requires your brain to subtly rip control away from the basal ganglia and hand it back to the prefrontal cortex to process this new, highly dangerous environment.
And I'm guessing that handoff isn't instantaneous.
Not at all. That handoff takes precious milliseconds. And if you add even a minor distraction to that handoff, like looking at a GPS, changing the radio, or just baseline early morning fatigue, the delay is fatal.
And the physical setup of these work zones means there is zero forgiveness for that delay.
Zero. I mean, think about a normal highway. If your brain takes an extra second to process a slowing car ahead of you, or if you have to swerve slightly, you usually have a paved shoulder to escape into, right?
Yeah, you have a spatial margin of error.
Exactly. But in these overnight construction zones, that margin is completely removed. You are trapped in a narrow chute lined with unyielding concrete barriers.
This is nowhere to go.
Nowhere. A momentary distraction doesn't result in a harmless swerve onto a rumble strip. It results in a pinball effect. You're violently bouncing vehicles between lanes and concrete walls, which leads directly to those multi-vehicle pileups we see on the news.
So we have a geographical setup where drivers are trapped in these narrow concrete line chutes without an escape shoulder, driven by brains that are literally struggling to switch off autopilot.
Yeah.
That perfectly explains the high frequency of these collisions. But, you know, to understand the sheer severity of them, we really have to look at the mass of the vehicles entering these chutes.
This is where the physics come in.
Right. What actually happens to the physics of a crash when one of the vehicles is a commercial tractor trailer?
The mass disparity is staggering, and it entirely dictates the transfer of kinetic energy. I mean, a standard passenger sedan or SUV weighs somewhere around 4,000 pounds.
Okay.
A fully loaded commercial tractor trailer can weigh up to 80,000 pounds.
80,000. Wow. I want to visualize this because it completely changes how we think about safety features. Normally, you know, a passenger car is engineered with a crumple zone in the front.
Right. The front end is designed to crush.
Yeah. It's designed to crush inward, absorbing the kinetic energy of hitting another vehicle of a similar size, right?
Mm.
But when an 80,000-pound truck hits that same passenger car, especially in one of these work zones where the car is pushed into a concrete barrier, I mean, it's like a bowling ball hitting a stationary pin.
That's a really good analogy.
The sheer transfer of kinetic energy is just undeniable. It seems like that engineered crumple zone is just instantly overwhelmed. Like the entire passenger car effectively becomes the crumple zone for the truck.
That is an incredibly accurate, if, you know, unsettling way to describe the mechanics.
Yeah.
Because when you are hit by a mass that is 20 times greater than your own, and you are pinned against an immovable object like a concrete barrier, your vehicle's safety engineering is simply bypassed.
It just can't handle it.
It can't. The passenger cabin is compromised almost immediately. The smaller vehicle is forced to absorb nearly 100% of that extreme kinetic energy.
And that energy transfer leads directly to the medical aftermath detailed in our sources here. They heavily highlight severe life-altering injuries, specifically traumatic brain injuries or TBIs, and severe spinal cord damage.
Right.
What is the actual mechanism inside the vehicle that makes these two specific injuries so prevalent in trucking crashes?
Well, it comes down to the violent acceleration and deceleration forces acting on the human body, because our bodies evolved to handle the speeds of running, right? Not highway collisions.
That makes sense.
So let's look at the traumatic brain injuries first. Even if your vehicle's airbags deploy perfectly and your seatbelt pretensioner locks your torso in place, your head is still moving.
Right. The neck acts like a pivot.
Exactly. When the massive kinetic energy of a truck impact violently halts your car, your skull stops. But your brain, which is essentially floating in cerebrospinal fluid, keeps moving forward.
So it physically slams into the inside of your own skull.
Yes. That is known as a coup contre coup injury. The brain impacts the front of the skull, and then the sheer force causes it to rebound and slam into the back of the skull.
Oh, man, that's brutal.
It is. But in these chaotic work zone crashes, the impacts are rarely perfectly head-on. They are often angled, which causes the vehicle to spin.
Okay, so what does that do?
This introduces rotational shearing. As the head whips violently side to side, the delicate axons, which are the communication pathways of the brain, they are literally twisted and torn.
And I imagine the spine is undergoing a very similar trauma during all of the spinning and crushing.
Exactly. The spine is whipped back and forth, or compressed vertically if the roof caves in. So we are talking about herniated discs, fractured vertebrae, and severed spinal cords.
Wow.
The critical takeaway here is that these are not injuries that heal with a cast and 6 weeks of rest. Axonal shearing in the brain and spinal cord damage often result in permanent lifelong deficits.
Which drastically changes the entire scope of the victim's reality. I mean, we're talking about a total disruption of cognitive function, the inability to return to work, the loss of financial stability, and the need for decades of specialized medical care.
Yeah, their whole life.
Everything changes in that fraction of a second inside that concrete chute.
It does. And that stark reality forces a transition that victims are almost never prepared for. Because the moment the medical triage stabilizes the patient, a completely different, equally unforgiving system takes over.
Right, the legal battle.
Yeah, the victim is instantly thrust into a highly complex adversarial legal fight.
And reading through the sources, this is really where the dynamic shifts. We have this massive insurance apparatus on one side and the injured individual on the other.
It's David and Goliath.
Exactly. And this brings us back to the sponsors of today's deep dive, the law offices of Norman Gershwin. Because when you're dealing with catastrophic injuries from a tractor-trailer crash in Westchester or NYC, the sources are very explicit about the type of advocate you require.
Absolutely.
But before we get to the specific lawyer, how do these trucking insurance companies actually operate in the aftermath of a crash? Like, what's their playbook?
Well, it's crucial to understand that massive commercial insurance companies do not operate on empathy. Right. They operate on actuarial risk management. They are billion-dollar financial institutions. Their primary objective, legally and financially, is to minimize the payout on any given claim.
So they're just looking at the bottom line.
Entirely. They have teams of investigators, adjusters, and defense attorneys whose sole job is to find reasons to shift the blame to the victim, dispute the severity of the medical injuries, or just drag the process out.
Just bleed them dry.
Yeah, until the victim is financially desperate enough to accept a lowball settlement.
So it is just a war of attrition.
Exactly. It is a highly calculated game of leverage.
Okay, so I want to ask a strategic question here. If another lawyer looks at a catastrophic injury case and says, this is too big, and hands it over to this guy, Norman Gershon, because the sources explicitly referred to him as the lawyer other attorneys call to try their toughest cases.
Yes, he's known for that.
What does that actually signal to a massive insurance company? Like, from a tactical standpoint, do they actually care when a law firm brings in an outside closer for a tough case?
Oh, they absolutely care. In fact, the identity of the opposing counsel is one of the primary variables in their risk assessment algorithm.
Really? Just the name on the letterhead?
Yes. If an insurance company knows the victim's attorney rarely goes to court and just prefers quick, easy settlements, they will intentionally offer a fraction of what the case is worth.
Because they know the lawyer won't fight back.
Because there is no credible threat. But when an attorney with 35 years of institutional knowledge in Westchester and New York City steps into the room, someone who is known for taking cases to verdict, the entire mathematical equation changes.
Because a jury trial is the one thing the insurance company can't completely control.
Precisely. Trials are incredibly expensive. They're public. And juries can deliver massive, unpredictable verdicts.
Well,
the sources highlight this firm's specific track record, and it explains exactly why they are called in as closers. I mean, we are talking about a $16.5 million verdict in Betancourt v. NYCTA, a $14.5 million settlement in Lynn v. Metropolitan Transit Authority, and a $2.5 million verdict right in Westchester County in Yurkovich v. Sippin, which dealt with a serious intersection crash.
Wait, $16.5 million against the New York City Transit Authority?
Yes.
I mean, that is not just negotiating with an insurance adjuster. That is going to war with a massive state-backed entity with virtually unlimited legal resources.
And winning. That is the critical point. When actuaries at an insurance company see a track record of multi-million dollar victories against giants like the NYCTA and the MTA, the risk profile of the case just explodes.
Yeah, the threat of a trial is no longer a bluff at that point. It is a demonstrated reality.
Exactly. This aligns perfectly with the client testimonial in the sources that describes Norman Gershon simply as, quote, a beast in the courtroom.
A beast in the courtroom. You know, it sounds less like aggressive marketing and more like just a necessary tactical posture. If the insurance company is using leverage to minimize your life-altering injuries, you have to bring in leverage that forces them to properly value your future.
It's the only way to play the game.
And the most important practical detail for you listening is how this representation is structured. The sources emphasize their guarantee. You only pay if you win.
Which is huge.
Right. They assume the financial risk of this massive legal fight so that the victim can focus entirely on physical rehabilitation rather than, you know, worrying about hourly legal fees.
It is the only way to level the playing field. You have the brutal physics of a commercial crash and the immense economics of the insurance industry stacked against an individual driver. Removing that upfront financial barrier to top-tier representation is just essential for justice.
Absolutely essential. So if you or a loved one has been injured in a truck accident, a construction zone crash, or really any serious motor vehicle collision in Westchester County or NYC, having that experienced trial lawyer changes the entire trajectory of the aftermath.
It really does.
You need to call them directly at 914-485-1444. I'll say it again so you can write it down. 914-485-1444.
The aftermath of these crashes is simply too complex, both medically and legally, to try and navigate without someone who understands the exact mechanisms of the system.
Exactly. So let's pull all these threads together as we wrap up this deep dive. We started with the terrifying reality of that early morning Westchester crash, looking at how circadian rhythms and cognitive overload caused drivers to miss crucial warnings.
Right.
We mapped out the daily hazards on the Cross Bronx Expressway, I-287, and the Hutchinson River Parkway, really exploring how our own brains betray us when autopilot meets sudden overnight construction.
That basal ganglia handoff.
Yeah. And then we broke down the unforgiving physics of 80,000-pound trucks, overwhelming passenger vehicles, leading to those devastating rotational brain injuries.
The coup contra coup.
Exactly. And finally, we unpack the adversarial reality of the legal system and the absolute necessity of having a fearless, trial-tested advocate to force insurance companies to take responsibility. Remember, if you need that leverage, the number is 844-485-1444, and you only pay if you win.
And as we close today, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over the next time you merge onto the highway. Consider the ultimate paradox of the modern commute.
Okay.
The very construction zones designed and funded to eventually modernize and safeguard our roads are currently the most volatile, dangerous places on them. Until the engineering of these temporary zones catches up to the reality of human neurobiology, how much trust are you blindly placing in the fatigued driver of the 80,000-pound vehicle trapped in the narrow concrete lane right next to yours?